You're listening to the Humans of DevOps podcast, a podcast focused on advancing the humans of DevOps through skills, knowledge, ideas, and learning, or the SKIL framework.
This isn't just about women. This is just about humans. I would love it one day where we don't actually use the term women in tech. If we could just talk about humans in tech or human tech or what that means, that would be the final victory, I think.
Hey everyone, it's Jason Baum, Director of Membership at DevOps Institute, and this is the Humans of DevOps podcast. Thanks so much for coming back and joining us. I am really excited today to be chatting with Simone Jo Moore. Simone is a DOI ambassador, master trainer, course developer, and professional speaker. And she's joining us today from the Southwest region of France, which is one of my favorite places in the whole wide world. Simone's work involves guiding the digital journey of organizations and individuals in adapting to humanizing IT. A recognized top 25 industry thought leader and 2021 Woman in DevOps list, Simone is the editorial director of the Era of Humanizing IT docuseries, contributing author to Verisim Unwrapped, Applied and Idle 4 High Velocity IT, and other international certifications, and she's also a contributor to DevOps Institute ebooks. Simone takes things beyond technology by combining it with her HR, organizational change, and complementary health background for a deep leadership experience shared through writing, consulting, training, workshops, conferences, podcasts, and social media. Simone, thanks for being on the podcast.
Hello.
That was a mouthful. You've done a lot. My bio would be two words. Jason Baum.
It's just got a few decades to go. Hey, look, with a name like that, you don't need any more years attached to it, do you?
Hey, I'll go for that. Why not? Simone, thanks for being on the podcast. Really appreciate having you here.
Oh, it's great. Besides that, I got dogged in.
Yeah, exactly. Simone, you don't sound like you're from the southwest of France. Where are you originally from?
I am an Aussie, born and bred.
Aussie.
Yeah. Oh, don't do that.
They have to do it. It's awesome. I love doing it because you always know when the Aussies are around.
Oh, you just have a complete brain conniption if you don't finish it.
That's like shaving a haircut here, I think. You don't know what that is. So there you go. It's very regional. So Simone, you said you're from Australia. How did you go from Australia to the southwest region of France?
My husband finally retired from his life in the Navy. So once he left there, it meant that we had the opportunity to live wherever we wanted instead of being told where we were going to be living, which makes a bit of a difference for a change. Not that we didn't have good places that we've lived, but it's... you know, the military life does shift you around a fair bit, which is great experience and good fun. But it was just really wonderful. And his background is archaeology and ancient modern history as well. And of course, where else would you want to come but Europe for a lot of that kind of stuff. So sure. By living here, we get to really experience European life and gives us the chance to explore more than your normal work vacation time gives you.
I imagine you did a lot of travel. And I know you have a military background as well. And so I guess you had your choice because you must have been to many, many places. So tell us a little bit about your military background and just your kind of career path, because you're now the second person I've spoken to on this podcast who had a military background and ended up in DevOps. So I'm just curious how that happens.
Well, it was really great because I love listening to all the podcasts. And when I heard Hope mention her background, I just nearly went, snap. That's very similar indeed from that perspective.
Oh, that's right. Third person. I forgot.
There you go. Yeah. So it was actually when I was listening to Hope's, because I also started in signals in the Army. And as she was describing as well, I've played possum in the ceilings, under the desks and so on with the cables and all of that kind of thing. So it's really kind of cool to hear it. And that's also too, I think, where my love affair with technology came in very early on. The technology has really shifted. It's been quite a journey learning to type from a manual typewriter to telex machines and Murray code PABXs and all that other stuff, as well as satellite equipment and more. So I think, you know, as my career progressed through service and support, now as a consultant, coach and trainer, I just Zoom along with everyone else. But it's pretty amazing what we've done. I think technology-wise, we're really trying to rediscover our humanity, because when I got into the civilian jobs and I started in telecommunications, which was hilarious because they wanted me in reception and secretarial roles because I could type at 98 words per minute and 100% accuracy. But all I wanted to do was the more techie things like fiber optics and submarine cabling projects and stuff like that. But I remember there was one time and it was a telco company I was working with, and they had a telex machine because they used to get all sorts of threats and stuff. It's quite a few decades ago for those that remember telex machines. But they used to have the ticker tapes like you used to see on the movies with the stock exchange, the little tapes with all the holes in it. Well, that happens to be called Murray code. And I was there reading the ticker tape from it because the print ribbon, the ink ribbon had run out. But, you know, code's code. It's a language. So it's just one of those skills that I had from my military time that you end up bringing into, you know, the civilian space. You know, my whole career has certainly been one of reprogramming and relanguaging myself, I guess, but not necessarily code, if that makes sense.
Yeah, we all kind of evolve, right, as time goes by and you take on different shapes and do different things. And I guess that's what makes life more interesting. What challenges did you face along your journey?
I think probably in that early part of my career, the most difficult thing was, like a lot of the women we look up to in the history of tech as well, you know, even back in the 1800s, starting with Ada Lovelace, I mean, here you are, you've got the daughter of Lord Byron, you know, the biggest poet. And from whatever family circumstance, her mother really pushed her into mathematics and science because didn't want her to have or go towards the artistic bent that her father had. And she ends up, you know, creating this amazing systems and the way to look at computing. And in fact, she even described her own approach as poetical science. Now, whether that was something from her father, I don't know, but it's also too as an analyst or a metaphysician. So she's even thinking, beyond what she thought a computer could actually do. And then you've got other people like Grace Hopper. Hey, she's Navy, military gal, can't go past who she is either. And she's also another inspiration for me because of that Morse code and Murray code and all those other elements that are in there. But I think one of the others that really inspired me from a female perspective in tech was Hedy Lamarr. Now, most people only think of her as a Hollywood actress or only know her as a Hollywood actress. They don't realize that, in fact, I was just watching one of her movies yesterday. It was really interesting watching her do all the Hollywood thing. And yet behind this is an inventor and contributed a science that's really fabulous. You know, she co-invented an early version of what we call that frequency hopping spread spectrum, which for me was all that whole communications. This is guidance and GPSing. This is what a lot of Bluetooth is built on even now, was her stuff. So that was all related to my work. So I think even the other thing about Lamarr that I find fabulous is that you don't have to be a techie to be in tech. I mean, she had no formal training and she was primarily self-taught. So working in a spare time because it was hobbies or her inventions, she really improved things for others. And we work with what these women you know, created. So I think when I think about my challenges, I think about their challenges and what they were also still able to do, because, you know, we still face those in many ways. Things have improved, yet some things haven't quite shifted.
Yeah, it's like you learn history, right? You said your husband was, you know, an architect and historian and had a historian type background too. And you, history, you just learn from mistakes, right? And you're supposed to not repeat them, even though many times we do, because we're flawed and we're human. And we talk about that. But yeah.
I think we're getting better at being more visible and being more transparent about women in STEM and women in tech. And mm-hmm. I think we are now focusing more on helping younger women, like earlier on from school, to be more interested. And yeah, I mean, I didn't even start, I think, school computing wise. Oh, who can remember back to Fortran and COBOL? Not many, but that's what, you know, they were the first programming languages that I got to have a look in at. And I must have been in my mid-teens at that point. So it wasn't early enough yet, I don't
think. Do you still think there are challenges or roadblocks for women in tech today?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that we're eroding them little by little. One of the great things I saw, there was a Women Tech conference a couple of weeks ago. That was just so fantabulous to be at, that we had, you know, men are on the program as well, and the men actually supporting the women in tech voices. And I think that's a big part of it, that this isn't just about women, this is just about humans. So I think that when we come back to the point, I would love it one day where we don't actually use the term women in tech. If we could just talk about humans in tech or human tech or what that means, that will be the final victory, I think, in terms of, yeah, there's history and it's great history, and there's a lot of women I'm so proud of to be inspired by. But yeah, when we don't have to say that phrase, then I think we've made it.
Yeah, we're all just people. We're all just humans trying to get by, do the best we can. It's something that you were talking about with the Hollywood actress. It got me thinking, you know, many people think, and probably wrongly, that things are just black and white, right? That's how we always are programmed to think. I think of some people as our left brain and some people are right brain, and you can't combine the two. And, you know, you're talking and giving examples, I'm thinking about that concept and, you know, the combination of that creative mind with a mathematical mind is something quite interesting. And that you could still be an artist and into tech.
Absolutely. I mean, well, you just have to look at graphic artists' careers. I mean, that's definitely one way of doing it. Look at all the work we can do with digital photography. You look at the way, for example, the art world uses tech to X-ray and validate, you know, primary pieces of work of art and make sure that they're the real thing. You know, we can use technology in so many ways in the art world, but it goes the opposite way too. I mean, I was never great at maths. I always did want to be the astronomer. I loved things like string theory, and I just really love all of that stuff. But my math was never great. So you look for alternate ways to move around that. You know, my jaw nearly hit the floor when I actually passed my you know, managers for finance stuff at university. And I actually got a credit instead of just a pass. I went, how the hell did that happen when math is not my strong suit? But what I actually discovered, and through training others, is it really is the way we think. It really is about that creative process of coming at things from different perspectives. We all have a natural creative spirit. We all like to evolve our skills. It's just the way we approach work, the way we live, the way we play. You know, as long as we've got the right environment and we've got the guidance to reconnect with that, you know, even the Phoenix Project is art. It's a novel and it creates a visceral reaction. It connects you with the story. I think, you know, storytelling is one of our biggest creative arts that we have in tech that we need to take more advantage of, for sure.
Are you looking to get DevOps certified? Demonstrate your DevOps knowledge and advance your career with a certification from DevOps Institute. Get certified in DevOps Leader, SRE, or DevSecOps, just to name a few. Learn anywhere, anytime. The choice is yours. Choose to get certified through our vast partner network, self-study programs, or our new SkillUp e-learning videos. The exams are developed in collaboration with industry thought leaders and subject matter experts in the DevOps space. Learn more at devopsinstitute.com/certifications.
It's the act of interacting with something, isn't it? It's when your medium, whether it's emotion or it's paint or it's voice or it's writing, it's that moment of interacting with something that creates the data that we need, the context in which it happens, that where we can be amazing at solving stuff.
And eliciting a response too, I think, is the other piece of it too. Right. I mean, that's art. That's art is representation of something, and that elicits a response.
And letting go of prejudged expectation. Yeah. That's a really critical thing, you know, in DevOps as well. We need that safe to fail environment. We need the psychological safe space to play in. You know, that's all part of being creative, you know, and allowing that process to occur.
And the lens, we used to talk about the lens, seeing things through a certain lens, and whether, you know, you can set that lens aside, which is incredibly difficult, or perhaps see through other people's lenses. We could talk about that.
Art is always subjective. But the experience the viewer has. So think of it in terms of the experience the customer will have, or that the relationship between dev and ops that they have with each other. The person that's experiencing it, their view is just as precious as what you create, whether you're creating the code or the service itself or the product. But, you know, sharing that story with an artist, whoever did that creation, when you're sharing your experience of what you see or that story, it brings out other emotions and it brings out other understanding. So it'll often lead to new thoughts or ways of seeing, new inspiration for other work. So ultimately, it's really this art is an ongoing conversation between lots of different elements of being.
And we should even mention you are an artist. I don't know if we actually have established that. You are a photographer and just recently you had a major accomplishment of being on a cover of a book.
Yes, so very, very exciting. In fact, it's the second time, but with a few years apart. but this is amazing. I love it because the author is a modern writer as well in crime thriller, and a lot of it is to do with tech. So I really can't wait to get my nose into that one. Really enjoy it. But it's so cool, really, to see your work in public. And wouldn't it be so cool if that's the way service desk guys felt or the way dev guys felt? You know, that little piece of code, that little thing that they created, and seeing it in action and knowing that, wow, people are enjoying that. People are it's making a difference.
Definitely. I would think you would feel pretty encouraged if you had that. You kind of mentioned it, but you have a background in complementary health. You kind of briefly just mentioned the combination of psychology and tech. Do you want to expand a little bit more on that? How was your background? I think kind of two pieces of this. You have an HR background and you have that complementary health background. How has that helped to contribute to where you are today in DevOps?
I think amazingly. Because a key figure DevOps, for all that we have our automation and measuring and that kind of thing, culture is always going to be at the forefront, and that's because of people. There's something I've always said around that, which is the fact that, you know, when we look at the skyline of an organization, you know, how it's shaped and how it looks, that's really a reflection of the business culture and the society context in which the business sits. And at the very heart of that is also then understanding that changes in the culture of the business are actually a reflection of the changes within the people. And when you think about it from that perspective, what we're really doing is changing the way people work. It's the people that are making the change. And as a result of that, that's going to enhance the business or not, depending on how they change. And that will shape the skyline of the organization or how it's seen by society and how it's seen by its customers. And I think when we talk about living in this VUCA world, you know, that volatile, uncertain, complex and ambiguous world, having the HR background and complementary health toolbox, if you like, of techniques and approaches, I find that we can shift that thinking dynamic. So it's not just about vanquishing the volatility we're in, but it's also being vibrant. They're like two sides of a coin. So, and there's also that flip between not just uprooting the uncertainty, but going to something and saying, okay, we're a bit uncertain, but wow, how unreal, you know, to be able to discover stuff still. There's still more that we can figure out. And also too, from trying to conquer complexity to being crazy passionate about solving the unknowns. And I think rather than attacking ambiguity because it's that gray space, well, thing is, real life does live in the gray space. You mentioned the black and white. So really it's about, you know, revealing and reveling instead of ambiguity, looking for the astounding. So yeah, that's, I like to look at those sides of the coin and shifting that thinking. And, you know, a couple of, would have been about 2.5, nearly 3 decades ago, I first brought out a stressless workshop that I did internally for my support teams. And it included things like teaching them hand reflexology, you know, pressing the acupressure points on your hand for certain things, you know, just come back from lunch and feeling a bit tired, or I've got the headache and there's a, you know, a little point on there to rub for the headache.
Oh, I mean, you're going to have to teach me this.
Oh, yeah, it's just fascinating stuff. But, I mean, it's all science-based. It's just that, you know, 3 decades ago and, you know, they were so just get to the next call, get to the next call, get to the next call. But your body naturally goes to do this anyway. It's part of your neuroscience. Your brain's always looking for, oh, I need to feel better. What can I do to feel better? And so the body's naturally doing it anyway. But back then they thought it was all frou-frou and fluffy and too out there because it came from complementary health rather than standard science, so to speak, or standard medical. But now it's all considered de rigueur. Now we're doing mindfulness, we're doing meditations, we're doing all sorts of things. So I'm really happy to see a lot of the stuff that I was kind of doing a long time ago, but now being part of the wellbeing programs, you know, mental health being talked about out in the open, that it's not about being ill or being well, or, you know, this is something that needs to be dealt with no differently to, you know, if we hurt our leg or whatever the case might be. You know, it's something that needs to be dealt with. And there are different approaches to do that. So it has to be built in as part of the whole thing. And helping people build their resilience. Now, you know, I can't tell you how to be resilient. I can't teach you to be resilient. What I can do is provide you the environment and the tools and the techniques and things for you to have available to you for when you need them, you know. That's what we need to be doing, having that empathy, compassion, going beyond emotional intelligence, having the agility. And a good leader knows how to deal with the messy emotions, not just the good ones.
Yeah, we talk about actually the past couple of podcasts, we've actually kind of grappled with some of these topics, these concepts, with Dr. Mark Peters. We spoke about baby steps, and I related it to the movie What About Bob, which is one of my all-time favorites, with Bill Murray and Richard Dreyfuss. And, you know, Richard Dreyfuss plays a psychiatrist, and he's teaching the concept to Bill Murray about baby steps. And it's obviously, it's a made-up book, and it's a made-up concept, but not really. I mean, it's what we talk about, like the little encouragements. Just do the little things first, and then you get to the, you know, you get to the big accomplishment. Or we on another podcast talked about encouragement, and encouragement as a form of motivation, and not, you know, it's that whole blameless culture, right? It's not assigning blame and not motivating through calling out when someone does something bad, but it's encouraging when they're doing something that is taking the right steps, when they're on their way, giving positive reinforcement. These are all long time
concepts. We need to be more complimentary of that sort of thing. They're the things we need to be encouraging for sure.
Yes, definitely. So along your journey, you know, did you, what advice did you receive, or what advice did you wish you had gotten that could have helped you today?
Wow, that's a big question, isn't it?
I like to ask really tough questions.
it makes me think about, so when I was 13, what should I have known? What would I have liked to have known then? I probably would have found a tutor in mathematics. You know,
yeah, me too. I'm really poor at math, really great at English, but
yeah,
but there's, you know, your right and left brain.
Yeah, but you know, this is the interesting thing. I'm so good at analyzing stuff. You give me a graph, you give me the pictorials, and I can pull that thing to shreds, right? You give it to me in, you give me the same data in a box, and I'm going to look at these numbers and go, okay. So it's really strange, isn't it? So again, it's just the way we perceive our world.
Yeah. I like to think I'm a logical person, but with math, for whatever reason, it just stumps me.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about all those missing X's. That's what, you know, drives me crazy. But, you know, again, that's the exploratory side. Curiosity. I think what I really would have enjoyed most, and I say enjoy because it would have lifted a lot of the angst and a lot of the traumas, would have been to understand some of these techniques and tools and methods for helping me through various things and become resilient earlier. You know, everything can go through, look, there's time and place. I mean, really, what can you change? I wouldn't be who I am now if I didn't have the journey I had. So what would I change? I don't know, because then I would be a different me right now.
That's a great
answer. Now
we're
going to just screw with timeline travel out.
Yeah, no, string theory. Here we go. Now, that was a great answer. I think that might have been one of the best answers I've gotten on that question. So what's, okay, let's ask another really hard one for some people. I don't know, maybe you'll have the answer right away, but what's one unique thing to you, one unique thing that nobody knows about you that maybe you've never told for general public consumption?
Can't tell you, or I'll have to kill you.
Oh yeah, no, you're not getting away with that one. You gotta tell us. Give us something.
Oh, that, okay, that they generally wouldn't know. I'm pretty much an open book the majority of the time now. I'm fairly transparent. I don't have any tattoos. I escaped the military without tattoos.
That's impressive.
Especially with some of the guys that I used to hang with, absolutely.
So you were telling me at some point, I think we were talking about, you know, escapism and hobbies and things, mm-hmm. like that, we, you know, we've been kind of putting ourselves into, I think, these days with the pandemic, and trying to say, we'll talk about mindfulness and talking about trying to keep yourself sane in a really tough time, when I think we're all going to have a little bit of trauma after this one, you know, being the pandemic. I've been pouring myself into music. I love music. That's my go-to. What is your go-to?
More often than not, and I think it's a habit I built from when I was a kid, or maybe it was built into me from my grandparents or whatever, because didn't have iPhones back then. So we read a lot. No Kindles, no iPhones. So I used to pour myself into books, and I love sci-fi fantasy. Absolutely love sci-fi fantasy. And McCaffrey's Dragon series was just brilliant for me. And when she finally gets to the point of how, when they discover the technology and that could have helped them, and oh, it's just love it all. And historical fiction. So that was probably my go-to, because you can be in that world or escape into that world. And I guess movies do that as well, a lot. So, yeah. Very and music cool. too. Anything that takes my brain away from actually having to process anything to do with work.
Isn't music just great for that? Music is, like, I think one of the greatest escapes. And it's so interesting because, like you were saying with art, like, there's so much of it, and it's all so different, and it all speaks to you differently. I was talking to Hope Lynch about that.
Okay, so who's your favorite, or what's your favorite music to go to then?
What's my favorite music type, genre?
Yeah.
I mean, I think I'm more rock than anything else, but I'm into it all. I love it all.
Yeah. Definitely the eclectic mix. I like I like jazz, and I like blues a lot. You know, I love my Billie Holiday, Josephine Baker's, you know, even Tallulah Bankhead had a really interesting voice. Libby Holman was another Torch singer. She was really cool as well.
And we talked about the blues on this podcast. We talked about Buddy Guy, and I'm a big Steve Winwood fan, and I'm a big Clapton fan. And yeah.
Well, you know, an interesting thing is only about an hour from where I live is Josephine Baker's Chateau Milland. So it's, you know, dedicated to her, where she was, and how she brought up her rainbow tribe, and all the rest of it. And it also has, and a little known fact, it also has in there her history about her work with the resistance during World War II with the French.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
And how she actually received the Croix de Guerre from the president. So
very cool.
There you go.
Well, some of the best.
Smuggled it out in her sheet music, apparently.
Well, I really appreciate you being on the podcast today, Simone. It was really great getting to know you and talking about everything from string theory to HR, psychology, and the military. And I think we threw in some DevOps in there too.
DevOps is always there.
That's right. Well, I really appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much.
Thanks. It's been really cool.
And thank you for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. I'm going to end this podcast the same as I always do, encouraging you to become a premium member of DevOps Institute to get access to even more great resources just like this one. Until next time, stay safe, stay healthy, and most of all, stay human. Live long and prosper.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. Don't forget to join our global community to get access to even more great resources like this. Until next time, remember, you are part of something bigger than yourself. You belong.